Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah Chaf Aleph. We have started the new perek, the Mishnah on Chaf Amud Beis. A quick review of the Mishnah, and then we get to start with the Gemara. We also started yesterday the first line of the Gemara, just as a quick recap. So we're going to start here at the beginning of the second perek of the Masechta. Again, more topics regarding the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. First parak, first 20 blot of the Masechta, we have dedicated ourselves to the discussion of the physical construction of the sukkah, that which qualifies the sukkah, that which disqualifies the sukkah. And now as we continue here in the second parak, so we're going to be focusing a little bit more on the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. We're now going to put the person in the sukkah, so to say. So we start with the Mishnah, Yashin Tachas Hamita, if you sleep under the bed, Basukkah, in the sukkah. So that means to say that you're going to fulfill the mitzvah. The mitzvah of the sukkah is to eat in the sukkah, to drink in the sukkah, and to sleep in the sukkah. Basically, all residential activities are to be done in the sukkah over the course of sukkahs. And so over here now, you plan on sleeping in the sukkah, but for whatever reason, you run under the bed. So, lo yasu yedei chavasu, according to the Tanakam, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Amar Rav Yehuda, no hagin hainu shahinu yushenim tachas amita bifnei hazikin below amar lana davar. Rabbi Yehuda says, what do you mean? Many times we were under the bed in front of the Zakenim. And now when he says many times, I'm not really sure what exactly the circumstances were that led him to run under the bed every single time. But for whatever reason, they were under the bed in front of the Zakenim many times and they were not reprimanded. So that means to say that if in fact what they did was wrong, so they would have been, they would have been corrected. They were not corrected. So that means that that is an acceptable behavior. I'm Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon is going to counter Rabbi Yehuda with another story. Maisa Betevi Avdosh Rabbi Gamliel. There was an incident with the slave of Rabbi Gamliel. We're talking here about an Eved Kenani. Eved Kenani, in terms of halacha, is chayv in mitzvos the same way that a woman is chayv in mitzvos, which means that they're exempt from mitzvos. Esei shazman grama time by mitzvos are not in their categories of obligation, which means that both of them are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. So now Rabbi Gamliel, who's describing his slave Tevi, so Shahaya Yashin Tachas Hamita, that he would be in the sukkah, but he'd be under the bed. V'amalem Rabbi Gamliel Zakenim. Now Rabbi Gamliel says to the Zakenim, Re'isim Tevi Avdi Shu Tamachacham. So you take a look at my Tevi. He's a big Tamachacham. V'yodesha Avadim Patur Min HaSukkah. And he knows that the Enevet is Patur Min HaSukkah, and therefore he can go under the bed. L'fichach Yashin Hu Tachas Hamita. Okay, and by this quip that was given by Rabbi Gamliel, so now we now know that somebody who sleeps under the bed has not fulfilled his obligation. Tevi slept under the bed, but he's an Eved Kenani, and he's not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. So Rabbi Shimon now is bringing the story with Rabbi Gamliel to prove in the other direction that one is not fulfill his obligation if in fact he sleeps under the sukkah. Okay, so obviously over here in our Mishnah, we have a major debate amongst the Tanaim as to whether one would be allowed to sleep under the bed. Obviously, a best position would be on the bed. But if one slept under the bed in the sukkah, so have you fulfilled your obligation? So it's a machlokas amongst the Tanaim of the Mishnah. Tanakama, bolstered by the story of Rabbi Huda and, sorry, bolstered by the story of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Gamliel, are of the position that you cannot be under the bed. And for reasons which we have not yet articulated, it's not going to work as a mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. And on the other hand, you have Rabbi Yehuda, who says that no, it would be totally fine. And again, reasons we have not yet explained. So the Gemara immediately starts off with the question, Vahaleka Asara? I don't understand. If you're under the bed, how can that be considered an ohel? Meaning that the only way that the Gemara can perceive there be an issue is if being under the bed would constitute being in an ohel, and that way it would be a barrier to being in the sukkah, meaning you'd be in an ohel within an ohel, and the ohel would be mafsik. But the only way that would work is if the sukkah is only 10 tfachim high. So the Gemara's response is very simple. Tirgam HaShmuel, B'mita Asara, yeah, we're talking about a bed that's 10 tfachim high, and under those circumstances, then we would have the discussion in the Mishnah. But anything less than 10 tfachim, so we wouldn't even be having a discussion, meaning for sure under those circumstances, it would be fine. I already pointed out yesterday, I'm not going to go through it again, but take a look at the first Tosfos over here in this Perek. Is this Shmuel being consistent with his position that he espoused 10 days ago? And Daf Yud, when we had the discussion of Sukkah Tachas Sukkah, so how big does the upper Sukkah need to be in order to disqualify the lower Sukkah? Shmuel says the upper sukkah has to be 10 tefachim. So maybe over here, our Gemara over here, Shmuel's position is consistent with his position that he said a week and a half ago back on Daf Yud. And Tosfos says maybe it's not true. Maybe our Gemara over here is not limited to just the position of Shmuel. Anyway, see Tosfos for that discussion. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Now, where we're going to go in the Gemara over here is that we're going to go off on a little bit of a tangent. The Gemara is going to take us on a really interesting ride over here. But the reason why we're going to go off on these tangents is that eventually we're going to come back and we're going to ask a question on Rabbi Yehuda. So we are going to be getting a lot of preparatory information in order to formulate a question, ultimately against the position of Rabbi Yehuda, Tanan Hausam. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to start with a Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Oalos. It's in the third parak of Oalos. So the Mishnah describes the following. Echad chur. Shecharu amayim o shratzim o shachlu melachas vechein midbach avenim vechein savar shokoros mal alatuma. So according to the Tanakhama, this Mishnah in Oalos, so if you have a natural ohel, the Mishnah over here gives numerous examples of what would be a natural ohel. Either number one, you basically have water, rushing water coming subterranean that basically is carving out an ohel. An ohel, by the way, the simple definition of an ohel is that all you need to be an area of one tefach by one tefach with one tefach of height. We know the purpose of establishing whether you have an ohel here in the Mishnah ohel, an ohelos, is respective to Tumas Meis, as we've gone over numerous times. That once I have an ohel, so, and I have a mace underneath the ohel, so that means that the tumah now is going to go up, hit the roof, and it's going to drop down on any area where the roof drops, where the roof is. So it goes up, hits the roof, stops, drops down to the area underneath. And any kli or person that's underneath the roof is going to be subject now and become tame. That will be a transmission of tumah known as tumas ohel. So over here, the Mishnayos and Ohelos are just going over what is an ohel. And the point of the Mishnah is it doesn't matter how the ohel is formed. Even if it's a naturally formed ohel, it would be an ohel. The first example is that basically water carves out this cavity. Oh, shratzim, or let's say bugs carved out the cavity. Or melachas, let's say salt or minerals, basically corroded and formed the cavity. And midbach avanim, or let's say you have a pile of stones. And again, the configuration over here, really simple. It's triangular in configuration. So I have now an ohel. V'chein savar shakaras, or if let's say we have boards. And again, the configuration of the boards is that it allows now for a tent that was formed. So in all these circumstances, even though there was no design to make an ohel, no human design to make an ohel, the ohel naturally occurred. It doesn't matter. An ohel is an ohel. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. And Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Ohel Shein Asu Bidei Adam Eino Ohel. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that an ohel that is formed by a person is an ohel. A naturally formed ohel is not an ohel according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. My time at the Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara over here wants to go over what is the basis of the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Yalif Ohel Ohel Mimishkan Ksiv HaChazos HaTorah Adam Kiyamos Ba'ohel Uksiv Hasam Vayifros Es HaOhel Ala Mishkan Malahalan Adam Bidei Adam Avkan Bidei Adam. So for Rabbi Yehuda, it's a Gzeirah Shavah. We have the word Ohel by the formation of the Mishkan. We have the word Ohel over here by Tumas Ohel. Obviously, the Mishkan is man-made. So that means to say that an Ohel is only going to be defined as an Ohel only if it's man-made. Rabbi Yehuda is a Gzeirah Shavah. V'Rabbanan. Now, obviously, the Chachamim who argue with Rabbi Yehuda, what are they going to do in terms of the Drasha? Ohel, Ohel, Reba. If you go through the Psukim regarding Tumas Meis, you will find that the word Ohel is repeated multiple times. The multiple times of repetition comes to tell me that not only is a man-made Ohel going to be an Ohel, but even a natural-made Ohel is in fact going to be an Ohel. Now, what does he do with the Gzeirah Shavah? So the Gemara doesn't point this out. It could be, but this is just speculation on my part. It could be that he didn't have a Mesorah for the Gzeirah Shavah. Again, now all this is bringing us to a point. So step number one. Step number one is that we learn the Mishnah in Ohel. In Ohelos, the Mishnah in Ohelos teaches us that according to Rav Yehuda, a man-made Ohel is not considered an Ohel. Now we move on to step number two. Step number two is to quote another Mishnah. This Mishnah over here is a Mishnah in Parah. This is in the third parak of Parah. We are going to be giving a description. So let's first go through the Mishnah and we'll explain why in after we go through the Mishnah. So you mean to tell me that according to Rav Yehuda, something that's not man-made is not considered an oel v'riminu? Gemara says, I'm going to challenge you based on the following. And that is, chatzeros hayubinuiz b'Yerushalayim al gabei asela. So there were these courtyards that were built in Yerushalayim, and it was built on top of stone. V'tachtem chalal. And these stones had cavities underneath them. Mimnei kever atahom, because of the possibility that there may be some bodies buried underneath. Kever atahom is a term, is an expression that's always used when describing a suffik tuma. So we don't know if there's tuma underneath. We don't know if there are bodies buried underneath. There is that possibility. So what we have now is this courtyard that is specifically designed and built so that it is a tuma-free environment. And that means to say that it's built on top of cavities and on top of an oel. Obviously, you have to design it in a manner in which it can obviously stand on something. So it has to be multiple layers of cavities underneath. Anyway, for more description of the engineering, so you could see some of the commentaries over there. Anyway, just for our purposes, it's suffice to say that there is an airspace of a tefach underneath this chatzer. So umevi anashim ubros v'yaldo sham. Pregnant women now will be brought over there, and they will be delivering in the chatzer. Umegadlos b'neim sham. And what they would do is they would raise their children specifically on the chatzer, never to leave the chatzer. Now, I say never. I mean, at least for the foreseeable future. Lipara. And the whole purpose of this is that the children now are going to be part of the process of preparing the para aduma. Umevim sharam shvarim. Now, what the children are going to be doing is that they're going to be drawing the water in order to make the solution of the paraduma. Paraduma solution is a composition of mayim chayim, a spring water, together with the ashes of the paraduma. And so in order to draw the mayim chayim, the spring water, so these children are going to be used. These children who never came into any kind of contact with tumas ames, meaning because they were raised in this bubble, and over here, I mean this almost literally, they were raised in this bubble where they're growing up now in a chatzar that is totally impervious to tumas mace. So as a result of that, they've never been exposed. They never had any kind of exposure to tumas mace, and they're going to be used now to draw the mayim chayim. So, and now they're going to have to go from their chatzar in to the wellspring in order to draw the mayim chayim. So that is going to require now a transportation. So transportation has to be done in a tumah-free environment. So how is that going to be done? So the Mishnah goes on to describe. Umevin shvarim, the agabem de la sof. So now they're going to bring the oxen. And on top of the oxen, you're going to put a board right on the back of the oxen. Vitinokos yoshin agabem. The children are going to be on top of the backs. On top of the board, which is on top of the back of the ox. The kosher shalav biyadeim. The cups that they're going to be have is going to be made up of stone. Stone is immune to tuma, impervious to tuma. Higil l'shiloach. They were taken now to the shiloach. That's the wellspring. Yardu l'soch hamayim umil they go down to the water in order to fill up the cups. V'aluv yashvu lahem, and they return. And Rabbi Yosi, omer mimkoma hayam mishalshel. Now, Rabbi Yossi says, as a further safeguard, so they wouldn't even drop down into the wellspring, but rather from the back of the ox, from the board on the back of the ox, what they would do is that with the string, they would lower the stone cups into the Mei Shiloach in order to draw the water. Vitanya. And on top of all this, we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Amar lo hayu mevi'in de la sos ela shvarim. So Rabbi Yehuda just had one point in which he disagreed, and that is that the children would not be riding on the boards on the back of the ox, but rather they would be riding directly on the back of the ox itself. Okay, now let's put a pause over here, as the Gemara is about to discuss the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. But before we discuss the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, the obvious question, which hopefully everyone here has been wondering, is why on earth are we doing all this? Now, obviously, when preparing the mechata, so we want to be in a state of tahara, that's clear. But this seems to be a more than exceptional extent in which the chachamim have gone through in order to ensure that we are in a state of tahara. Over here, we are, just if we can wrap our heads around this idea, we are raising children right, till where they get to a certain age. Let's say, just for argument's sake, that the age is 8 or 9 years of age. We're raising children for 8 or 9 years in this chatzer on a bubble where they are never to leave in order to make sure that they don't come into contact with even a possibility of a safek tuma. Why would we be doing this? So Rashi over here gives the background information, and I'm sure if you've been in the daf, you've heard this before. And that is that there was a tremendous controversy that existed between the Chachamim and the Tzedukim. Tzedukim were a sectarian group started by Tzadok, who happened to have been a student of Antigonus Ish Socho. See, one of the first Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos for that Shalshalos, for that tradition. But the Tzedukim were a sectarian group, and the Tzedukim dismissed, they rejected the Torah Shabbat Peh. And they only went with the Torah Shabbat Chsav. And so in the rejection of the Torah Shabbat Peh, so many things that we have as a Masorah, as part of our tradition, so they simply rejected. One of those items was in terms of how to prepare the Paraduma. So the Torah says regarding the Paraduma that the person, the Kohen, who's going to be responsible for the burning of the Para, so he's going to be an Ish Tahor. So a simple reading of the Pasuk would indicate that the person has to be totally devoid of any type of Tumah. He has to be Tahor. Meanwhile, we have as part of our Mesorah that it could be somebody who's a Tful Yom, which means that as part of our Mesorah, that means that if you have, let's say, for example, the Kohen who comes into contact with Tumah and he tovels in the mikvah, so he is now in a state of Tful Yom. He still has a little bit of residual Tumah. He will have to be waiting till Harav Shemesh, then and only then would be allowed to eat Shumah. Does he become totally Tahor? But meanwhile, from the point in between where he toveled in the mikvah and he experiences Harav Shemesh, the sun setting, so he's in the state of what's called the Tful Yom. Our Masorah teaches us that a Tful Yom is in fact allowed to participate in the burning of the Paraduma. Good, that's our Masorah. The Tzedukim they rejected the Masorah and they believe, no, that you need somebody who's totally devoid of Tumah. So in order to educate and show the people that we are Masorah, so we're going to do something which is really strange and really unusual. And that is that we're going to specifically go out of our way, the Kohen who is about to burn the Paraduma, so we're actually going to be Metamehim, have him come into contact with the Sheretz, as a simple example. He'll Tova in the Mikvah, so now he's in the state of Tvil Yom, and then, and only then, is he going to be burning the Paraduma. In other words, he's not going to wait till Harav Shemesh, and this will be a clear demonstration of our Masorah and a rejection of the Tzedukim. So basically, in the Paraduma process, so we introduce Tumah. So, since the Chachamim are introducing Tumah, so they want to make sure that everyone knows that it's not that we're light about our treatment of Tumah. This is just simply to show that we have our Masorah and the Tzedukim are wrong. But to counterbalance, what the Chachamim did is they did a number of extra measures to show that we take Tumah Tahara really seriously. And that brings us all to what we just learned together. Meaning the idea that we have these children being born on a chatzer, which is basically in a tumah-free environment, and raised there for 8 or 9 years and sent on the back of an ox in order to draw the water, and the discussion as to whether or not they descend in order to draw the water or they're drawing the water from the backs, and the discussion in terms of whether there's a board, there's a plank on the back of the ox, or there's no plank on the back of the ox. All this was done by the Chachamim to show that it's not because we're light about Tumah Tahara, we're serious about Tumah Tahara. But now you contrast that to the fact that we take the Kohen who's ready to burn the Paraduma and we're Metamehim and he tovels in the mikvah. So it's now clear that this is not because we're light about Tumah Tahara, it's because we want to demonstrate that we are rejecting that the position of the Tzedukim. That is the complete story in terms of what is going on over here. Good. Now that we know the larger picture, so now we are going to zoom in on specifically the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that when these children are going on the backs of the ox, so there's no plank over there, there's no board, they're going to go directly on the back of the ox. I'll just point out over here, Tosus makes this point over here on our daf, right? I say that the children are growing up in a tumah-free environment. That's not perfectly accurate. Obviously, the mothers who just gave birth to them, they're tame, they're tumas yoledes. Obviously, the mothers who are raising them, they're going to be anida every month. So they're not growing up in a totally tumah-free environment, but there's not going to be tumas mace, meaning that we could say for sure. So the tumah that is totally removed and negated by doing it in this format is that the children are going to be in a in a tumah mace-free environment. Okay. Anyway, so now we're zooming in specifically on the point of Rav Yehuda and the plank. So we are on Chafalaf Amud Aleph, and we are halfway down on the Amud. After having quoted the Braisa that Rav Yehuda says that they don't use a plank, but the children are riding on the back of the shvarim, of the oxen. So the Gemara says, Vahashvarim, de ol she'enu asur bidei adam hu. Now the Gemara says, now as far as the ox is concerned, so it's not man-made, meaning obviously it naturally occurs as an oel. Right now the Gemara is assuming that the ox is, the back of the ox is going to have a one tefach space between the, let's call it the stomach of the ox and the ground. In other words, basically it forms an ohel, protecting the child riding on the back of it from any type of tumas mace. The Gemara says, yeah, but according to Rav Yehuda, I am confused, because we said that according to Rav Yehuda, a man-made ohel is considered an ohel. A natural forming ohel is not considered an ohel, and therefore should not be able to protect the children that are on the backs. So how is this working according to Rav Yehuda? So Vahashvarim de Ol Sheino Asu Bide Adam Vakatan Rabbi Huda Omer Lohayum Avim Vlasos El Shvarim. So that is what seems to be now a really strong question against the sheet of Rabbi Huda. To which the Gemara's response is Ki Asa Ravdimi Amir Revelazar Modi Rabbi Huda Kamala Egrov. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's true that according to Rabbi Huda, a natural forming OL is not considered an OL. However, that's only if the OL is a minimalist OL of a tefach. But once it is a male egrof, once it's the size of a fist, which means to say it's more than a tefach, even Rav Yehuda will admit, he will agree, that such an ol would be an ol even if it's a natural forming ol. Now this position of Rav Yehuda that when it's a male egrof, so he's going to agree, so that's a really difficult position to entertain, considering the fact that on the top of our very daf, what was the source of Rav Yehuda? You learned it from Gzeira Shavah from the Mishkan. Now, the Mishkan is certainly the size of a male egrof. It's more than a male egrof. It's more than a fistful in terms of its size. So how the Gemara can make this qualification within the sheet of Rav Yehuda, once we know that the source of Rav Yehuda is from the Mishkan, so admittedly that's difficult, and it is addressed, but I don't have a good response in terms of how that works. So anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Kamale Egrov, Tanya Namahach, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. And the Braisa teaches us a mode of Rabbi Yehuda Bishkifin, Uvin Akike Asalim, that Rabbi Yehuda will agree that if I have Shkifin and Akike Asalim, these are naturally forming OLs that occur within nature. A rock being detached from a, from the side of a, from the side of a cliff. Or a crevice, a large crevice within the rock. Regardless. In other words, we're talking about big, crevices, big oil. Now I say big, I mean just simply a male egrof. So Rav Yehuda would agree that that is going to have the definition of being an ohel. Therefore, if you have tumah over there, it'll stop the tumah from going up further. It'll spread the tumah underneath the roof. Anyway, there's a point where Rav Yehuda will concede. So the Gemara says, "Vahari delas diyesh ba kam egrof and v'ketan." Rav Yehuda amar lo hayim even delasos ela shvarim. So the Gemara says, "Fine. Here's what I don't understand." Why is Rav Yehuda removing the plank from the top of the ox? Meaning the ox itself, we just established according to Rav Yehuda, is in fact an ohel. It is the size of a male egrof. I get that. But why is Rav Yehuda removing the plank? The plank is for sure the size of an egrof. So Amar Abaye, lo hutzrichu la'avi delaso. So Abaye says, you didn't understand. Rav Yehuda is not saying that you can't use the plank. Rav Yehuda is just simply saying that there's no need to do so. It's just simply unnecessary, because even the shore itself would be sufficient for the reasons which we just articulated. Rav Amar lo hayu mevin delasos kol ikar mishemibnesha da'ato shel tinok gasa alav shamayosi rosho o achad me'evarav v'yitma. Rav's response is that according to Rav Yehuda, the planks are just simply a bad idea. Why are the planks a bad idea? Because then as the child is riding on top of the plank, on top of the oxen, so the child is going to be really comfortable. And because the child is going to be so comfortable, so he's going to extend an arm or a leg, something out of the environment of the plank. In other words, he'll go over the plank, over the side of the plank, he'll become tamei. However, contrast that too, if he's riding directly on the back of the ox, he's going to be uncomfortable and he will keep his hands and feet within the ride the entire time. Bekever at Tahomas. We turn to the top of the Amud Beis. Tanya, Kavasei de Rava. This presentation of Rabbi Yehuda that was given by Rava It's that because we want to remove the safety and security of the child. I know out of context, that's not a good sentence. But we want the child to be uncomfortable. This, the way that Rava presented Rav Yehuda, the Gemara says, we have a brisa supporting this. As the Gemara turns to the top of the Amud Beis, as we have turned to the top of the Amud Beis. The Tanya Kavasi de Rava, Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Ayum Avi, and the last is called Ikar. Mimnei Shadato Shotina Gasa Alav. We do not want to bring the plank on top of the ox. We don't want to have the child riding on top of the plank on top of the ox because he's just simply going to be too comfortable. Shema Yotzi Rosho Echad Me'evara V'yitma B'kever HaTahom. He's going to then either extend an arm or a leg outside because he feels so comfortable, and he's going to be exposed to tuma, possible tuma. L'mivin Shavarin HaMitzrim. We're going to bring Egyptian oxen. Shikrei Soseim Rachavos. They have a wide belly. Vatinokos Yoshvin al Gabem, the children are going to be sitting on top. Vikososhavim biyadehem, with the stone cups in their hands. Igiela Shiloach, they get to the Me Shiloach Yadu Milumba Aluva Yashvula Lahen al Gabehem. And then they're gonna go down and they're gonna draw the water, they're gonna go back on the oxen, and they're gonna be returned. Okay. Now, all this beyond fascinating, and all this was really brought into so that we can now formulate a question. So now we have learned the Mishnah Ohelos regarding a natural formed Ohel. We also learned that within the Shita Rav Yehuda, who says that a naturally formed Ohel is not an Ohel, but we just learned together by learning that Mishnah Para that that's only true when it comes to a minimalist Ohel of one tefach by one tefach. However, once it's a Malei Egrof, so then even Rav Yehuda would agree that a natural forming Ohel is in fact considered an Ohel. With all that stated, the Mishnah Ohelos and the Mishnah Para, and the discussion that we had surrounding it. So now it brings us back to our discussion. Vehare mita. So now let's go back to our mission over here, the first mission of the second parak of Sukkah, where we had a debate amongst the Tanaim as to whether or not if one sleeps under the bed within the Sukkah, has he fulfilled his obligation of the mitzvah of Sukkah? Vehare mita, diyesh bakame egrofin. So we're going to assume that the area underneath the bed is at least a male egrof. V'tanan, Rav Yehuda Omer, no agim hainu she, hayinu yishenim tachas amitim imnei azakenim. So, and meanwhile, Rav Yehuda had no problem whatsoever sleeping under the bed. And he said, we did so many times in front of the zakenim, and they didn't protest. And so the obvious question now is, how, according to Rav Yehuda, are you sleeping under the bed? The bed is an ohel. It wasn't designed as an ohel, doesn't matter. Even a natural ohel, according to Rav Yehuda, would be an ohel if you have the size of a male egrof. We're assuming, of course, that the area under the bed is at least the size of a male egrof. Now, it's kind of funny because in the beginning of the entire sugya, right after the Mishnah, we said that it was 10 tefachim high, which is obviously much more than a male egrof. But anyway, but it's at least the size of a male egrof. And so according to Rav Yehuda, it's an ohel. Why would it be okay? The Gemara is basically asking, how, according to Rav Yehuda, is it going to be okay? And I know the Gemara could have asked that question really simply at the beginning, but we had an opportunity to go through the Mishnah Ohelos and the Mishnah in Para, and the Gemara likes, you know, likes taking advantage of those opportunities. So the Gemara gives...
Bed is man-made, doesn't make, it's man-made at the end of the day.
It's man-made at the end of the day, but the area underneath is quote-unquote natural, because that wasn't the designed area. The Gemara is going to make this point in just a moment. That wasn't the designed area to be within. So to say, the area underneath is almost like a naturally formed ohel. That's basically the thought process of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Shani mita ho v'lagaba asuya. So the Gemara says, well, a bed is different because its design was to be al gaba, it was to be on top of it. What the Gemara is trying to argue right now is that the area underneath is not an ohel because there was no intent on making that area underneath a livable area. So the Gemara says, really, that's interesting. Shvarim nami ligaban asuyan. Well, the Gemara says, well, if you're talking about an animal, so what is the function of the animal? In other words, we're not talking about the structure of the animal, but the function of the animal. Obviously, we're interested on being on the back of the ox. The back of the ox is where you're riding. Is where it's where the animal is going to be hitched to its yoke. In other words, the back of the ox obviously is the key. And meanwhile, according to Rav Yehuda, the ox itself is serving as an ohel, meaning the area underneath is creating an ohel, even though it's the back of the ox which is really the most significant for us. So kiasa rabin. So basically what the Gemara is bothered by is this argument of the area underneath the bed was never designed as an ohel. So the Gemara counters by saying the area under the axe was also never designed as an oel, and yet we treat it as an oel. So ki asa rav and amar rav lazar shani shvarim ho meginim al haroim bechama mimnechama uvikshamim meikshamim. So the Gemara says, well, you know, when it comes to an animal, so when you're a shepherd and the elements are really rough outside, it's really sunny or it's really rainy, so what the shepherds will do is they'll go underneath the animal in order to gain shelter from the elements underneath the animal. So the Gemara is trying to argue now is that the area underneath the ox is in fact an oel. It's used as an oel. So yahachi mitanami ho megina al min alim v'sandalim shetachtera. So the counter argument over here is that, look, what do you do with your shoes? You put your shoes under your bed. So the area underneath the bed also is megin. It also protects. Okay? So ela amarava shanishvarim ho v'asum lagin al b'nei ma'ayim shalahem. So the Gemara says, once again, we're going to try to make a distinction between an ox as an oel versus a bed as an oel. So when it comes to an ox as an oel, so the Gemara now proposes that really the truth of the matter is that the ox being used as an oel is in fact being used as a, is there to protect the entire ox in of itself. Shenema, the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Eov, or ubasar, talbi sheni uvaatzamos vigidim, so that basically what is happening over here is that the ox is being used as the back of the ox is basically the protection for the actual ox itself. Meaning all the insides of the ox are being protected by the rib cage, by the vertebrae of the ox. And so therefore, and in fact, the pasuk in Eov says that the atzamos and the gidim are tisochecheni. It's a schach. It's basically the shelter for the ox itself. Okay, so that's one possibility. So what the Gemara now is arguing is that as far as the ox is concerned, the ox is considered an ohel, simply because of the pasuk in Eov giving it a description of how it protects itself. And so that means to say that the area underneath the ox can now serve as an ohel. As opposed to the bed, the Gemara is trying to argue that as far as the bed is concerned, the bed is not considered an ohel underneath. It was never designed as such. Even though the Gemara just moments earlier said that you put your shoes underneath, I guess the Gemara doesn't make this point, but I guess the Gemara, what we would say is that the shoes are really not that significant. Meaning, the just because you put your shoes under the bed doesn't mean that the bed now is a bona fide ohel. That's what the Gemara is arguing. Ibai Seim, the Gemara says, I'll give you another way to present this, and that's Rav Yehuda Latame. The truth of the matter is that the bed is an ohel. So the Gemara says, how about this? Let's change course right now. Let's say that as much as the animal's an ohel, the bed is an ohel as well. And if you sleep under the bed, it's still not going to share the mitzvah of sukkah. You will have fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. How does that work? So the Gemara presents the following. Rav Yehuda Latami Damar sukkahs giras keva bi'inan, v'havale mita diras arai, v'sukkah o'al keva v'lo asi o'al arai u'mevato o'al keva. So the Gemara says that we have to contrast the o'al of the sukkah and the o'al of the bed. The o'al of the sukkah is a diras keva. Now you'll remember, back on Daf Zion, so the Gemara listed together, string together, a number of Tanaim who are of the opinion that the sukkah has to be a diras keva. On that list, one of the Tanaim that we put there was Rabbi Yehuda. And that was primarily because of the first Mishnah. Not primarily. It was because of the first Mishnah in the Masechta. The first Mishnah in the Masechta. Rabbi Yehuda says that a sukkah can be greater than 20 amos. So as an explanation of why that is, so the Gemara says it's because Rav Yehuda says that the sukkah has to be a diras keva, not a diras arai. So you remember many other Tanaim were put in that list of people who maintained that the sukkah has to be a diras keva, not a diras arai. So the sukkah, according to Rav Yehuda, is a diras keva, which means that the ohel of the sukkah is going to fall under the category of a keva. Meanwhile, as far as the bed is concerned, the Gemara describes it as an ohel arai. Now, why is it awry? So it could very well be simply because the bed is moved around all the time. You pick the bed up, you move it from one place to another. The Gemara describes that as an oel awry. And so now what Rav Yehuda is arguing is that the oel awry of the bed is not going to be able to negate the oel keva of the sukkah. The oel keva of the sukkah is just simply more permanent, and a temporary structure cannot negate a permanent structure. That's the argument on behalf of Rav Yehuda. So Vaha Rabbi Shimon da Amar Nami Sukadiras Keva Biinan, Vasi Ola Raimavata Ol Keva. So the Gemara says, okay, but if you go back to the Gemara and Daf Zayin, you will note that of the other Tanaim that were placed on that list, we also had the Shita Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon also was of the position that the Ol had to be an Ol Keva. The Sukkah has to be an Ol Keva. So the Gemara says, now we know in our Mishnah, in the first mishnah of the second parak, so Rabbi Shimon argues with Rabbi Yehuda. But if our argument for Rabbi Yehuda is that the bed is just an ol arai and the sukkah is an ol keva, and an ol arai is not going to be able to negate an ol keva, so the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Rabbi Shimon should be on board. And it happens to be that in our mishnah, Rabbi Shimon argues with Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, so how does that work? So the Gemara says, Baha Pligi. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're absolutely right. In other words, according to Rabbi Shimon, the sukkah is an ol keva, and the way that it works is Baha Pligi. Mar savar asi ol arai umevata ol keva, umar savar lo asi ol arai umevata ol keva. It's exactly this point that is at the core of the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that the ol arai of the bed is not negating the ol keva of the sukkah. And even though Rabbi Shimon agrees on the two premises, the bed is an ol arai and the sukkah is an ol keva, Rabbi Shimon agrees with both points, but he is of the position that it doesn't matter. The fact that you're under the bed, even though it's an ol arai, that is in fact going to negate having being in the sukkah, which is an ol keva. Okay. Gemara presents that as the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah. So, to make a long Gemara a lot shorter, so basically what comes out over here is that the machlokas in our Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, in terms of whether a person has fulfilled his obligation of the mitzvah of sukkah when he's under the bed in his sukkah, so Rabbi Yehuda says he's fulfilled his obligation, Rabbi Shimon says he has not, and now, as the Gemara has concluded its discussion, its lengthy discussion, almost a daf, so it comes out now that the whole debate is predicated on the fact that for both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, your sukkah needs to be an ol keva. The bed qualifies as an ol arai. And the only discussion now, the only debate is hinging on whether or not being an ol arai is going to negate having been in an ol keva. Do we look at the being under the bed as being in a separate and distinct ohel from being that in the sukkah? Rabbi Yehuda would say no because it's an ol arai. And Rabbi Shimon says that despite the fact that it's an ol arai, it still negates being in a sukkah. We continue. We're at the two dots on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Amar Rabbi Shimon Maisa B'Tevi Abdo. The incident with Tevi. So Tanar Rabbi Shimon Misicha Sosho Ramin Gamliel Lamanu Shnei Dvarim. So Rabbi Shimon says that, look, this is just conversation. And from the conversation of Rabbi Gamliel, we learn two things. Lamanu shavadim patur min ha-sukkah. Number one, we learned that an eved is patur from the sukkah. Now, wouldn't we have known that? So Tosus points out, yeah, but we would have thought otherwise. Right? The second Tosus on the Amud. It's a mitzvah says shazman grama, women and an eved cannot near patur, but I might have thought that we have a drasha. We're going to see it later in our perek of teshvu kein taduru. The way you live in the sukkah is the way you live in your home. Women live in the home. Avadim live in the home. So I might have thought that even though sukkah is a mitzvah seseh shazman grama, that they would be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. That's the havamina. Okay, so from Rabbi Gamliel, we learn that we reject the havamina. And that's number one. Number two, v'lamanu shayashan tachat amita lo yasi yedei chavaso. And sleeping under the bed, you have not fulfilled your obligation. So v'lema midvarav shal Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara says, now, Rabbi Shimon, why are you saying that we're learning that from the sicha of Rabbi Gamliel? Why not just simply say that we learn it from the dvarim, from the words of Rabbi Gamliel? So milsa gavorche kamash malanki had amar rav acha bar ada va'amri la amar rav acha bar ada amar rav hamenuna amar rav minayin shafilu sichas tamid echacham tzricha limud. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon wants to tell us a nuanced point, which is that even though it's not a formal teaching of Rabbi Gamliel, meaning he's just conversing, he's having conversation, and meanwhile, just from the simple conversation that you have with the Talmud Chacham, so that requires limud. You have to study it. In other words, you have to take everything he says seriously, and you can. You can look into statements that are made by Talmud Chacham, Shenemar va'aleu lo yibol. Pasuk in Tehillim describes how the leaves also will not wither, meaning that every part of the tree is significant, not just the fruit, obviously, but even the leaves. So over here in the analogy, so when the Talmud Chacham is in the Beis Medrash and he's teaching and he's expounding, obviously he's meant to be taken seriously. But even outside, meaning not just the fruit in the analogy, but even the leaves, even just the sicha, even just quote-unquote casual conversation, that also needs to be taken seriously as well. Good. We are starting with the Mishnah. Let's just run through the next sugya, although the next sugya happens to have a lot of halacha lamaisa, but let's run through the next sugya. Hasomech sukasu bikari amita, kshera. So let's say you take your sukkah and you lean it on the bedpost. Now, as we discussed already numerous times, so the bedpost is mekabel tumah. The bed frame is something that is lie down on, and therefore subject to tumas medras. Therefore, it's mekabel tumah, and obviously you cannot use the bedpost as chach itself. But what the Mishnah over here is describing is that basically you're putting the schach and you're putting the schach on top of the bedposts. So even though the bedposts themselves are mekabel tumah, but they're not your schach, they're just simply there to support the schach. So according to the Tanakam and the Mishnah, that's fine. And Rav Yehuda Omer, im eino yechol la'amod b'fnei atzma psula. Rav Yehuda says that if the schach cannot stand by itself, meaning that the only way that the schach is able to stand is only by being supported by the bedpost. So Rav Yehuda says that such a sukkah is unacceptable. It's disqualified. Now, what's the basis for the sheet of Rav Yehuda? So the Gemara now is going to be discussing. So my time at the Rav Yehuda, so the basis for Rav Yehuda, pligi bar Rabbi Zer, Rabbi Abba bar Mama. So there are going to be two opinions on this matter. Chad amar mimnei she'en lo keva, v'chad amar mimnei she'ma'amida b'davra mekabel tumah. So, number one is that it is ein la keva. It's simply not something which is established. And the other is because it is a davra mekabel tumah. So the Gemara says, now what's the difference between the two? Meaning that either the bed frame is not something which is established, or it's because the bed frame is something which is mekabel tumah. May benayu kegon shenat shpudim shel barzel v'sichech aleihem. So the Gemara says that instead of a bed frame, let's say we use metal poles. So leman damar fila lefish in la keva hareish la keva. So the Gemara says, look, if the issue is a question of stability, so the metal frame obviously will give you stability. Now, if the issue is that it's something which is mekabel tumah, so this obviously is mekabel tumah. The metal poles are mekabel tumah. So that obviously would be the nafka, meaning between the two. So the Gemara here does not give us the one reason behind the shita of Rebbe Yehuda, but the Gemara in fact gives us two reasons behind the shita of Rebbe Yehuda. So, in terms of two possibilities. So, Amar Abai Loshanu Elosamach Avasichech Agav Hamita Kshera. So, the Gemara says, now look, if what you do is that you put the schach on top of wood, which is on top of the bedpost, so that would be fine. My time alamand Amar Lefishen Lakeva Hareish Lakeva. Meaning to say that if the schach now is not just balancing on the bedpost, but the schach is on a sturdy frame, so then that would be fine. And laman dar mimnesha ma'amida b'davar mekabel tumah, hare ein ma'amida b'davar mekabel tumah. If you're putting the schach on a wooden frame and not on the bedpost, so then obviously the schach is not being supported by a davar mekabel tumah. Okay, so perhaps you've heard once or twice before this idea of ma'amid, that if the schach is resting on something which is a mekabel tumah, so then the sukkah is not going to be good. Okay, so all that is now predicated on the short gemara that we just went through. Our gemara just introduced us to this idea that if you're misachich on a davar mekabel tumah, so that is no good. So now we know, first of all, in the Mishnah, it's a machlokes between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim seemingly are not bothered by this idea at all. In other words, if the support for your schach is a davar mekabel tumah, the Chachamim aren't bothered by that. It's only the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. And on top of that, within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara gave two reasons why using a bed frame is no good, either because it lacks stability or because it's a davar mekabel tumah. So even if we subscribe to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, there are actually two reasons why it is that it is simply no good. It's simply going to be disqualified. So in terms of the halacha, so it shouldn't be surprised. According to the Shulchan Aruch is not concerned about a davar hamekabel tumah. If you support the schach on something which is a mekabel tumah, the Shulchan Aruch is not bothered by that. However, other poskim are in fact say that we should be concerned with this, and you should not have the schach resting directly on something which is mekabel tumah. You shouldn't have it resting on metal to be concerned for the shita of Rav Yehuda. But again, to be concerned for one explanation within the shita of Rav Yehuda. That's the short version of the discussion of putting a schach on something which is mekabel tumah. Let's quickly review the entire daf today. We started the Mishnah of the second parak. The Mishnah tells us that going underneath the bed in the sukkah, machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda, the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda, whether you fulfilled the mitzvah. Tanakhama says you have not. Rav Yehuda says that you have fulfilled the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. So what is that all predicated on? First, the Gemara's Mamid, that we're talking about a bed that's 10 tefachim above ground. That's number one. And number two, the Gemara says, the Shita Rav Yehuda, that why is it that if you're under the bed, that does not negate the sukkah? So after a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, having gone through the Mishnah Nolos, having gone through the Mishnah in Para, after a lengthy discussion, what it comes out to is that according to Rav Yehuda, the Olo is a diras arai, an oel arai. The sukkah is an oel keva, and your oel arai is not going to be negating the oel keva. That is the explanation of the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon, who argues, Rabbi Shimon said, agrees with the premises that the bed underneath is an oel arai, and the sukkah is an oel keva, but he just simply says that your oel arai is not going to be negated. The oel keva is not going to be able to ignore the oel arai, and you have to view yourself as in a separate oel, and that's why according to Rabbi Shimon it simply does not work. Akan, and then the Gemara goes on from there to describe how when Rabbi Gamliel tells the story about his about Tevi, so you have to take, even though it was casual conversation, you have to take every word that he says seriously based on the pasuk in Tehillim, va'alehu lo yibol. And then finally, the last thing that we discussed today was using the bed frame as the support for the schach. Machlokus in the Mishnah, whether that works or does not work. According to the Chachamim, that's fine. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not fine. And within the Gemara, two explanations for Rabbi Yehuda. Either because the bed frame does not have stability, it's not sturdy. Right? Obviously, you're propping the bed frame on the side, so it does not give you the proper stability, and we're just simply, I guess Rabbi Yehuda is afraid that the schach is just going to fall down. Or the other problem is that if the bed frame is supporting the schach, so therefore the bed frame itself is obviously a davar mekabel tuma, and now the schach is going to be being supported by something which is mekabel tuma, which means that the schach is no good. According to the second explanation, Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, what's the nafkamina between the two? What if I use not a bed frame, but what if I use metal poles? So if the issue is stability, you have it. If the issue is something which is makabel tuma, you obviously, that remains the problem for the metal poles. And then finally, last thing that we discussed was the position of Abaye. That if you are using the if the schach is not resting on the bed frame, meaning the bed frame is there serving as the walls, but the schach is actually resting on a wooden frame, so then there'd be no problem whatsoever.